What up?
I'm going to start that. Okay. The first thing I want to do is apologize to you.
To me?
Yes. Because I guess it was 2 weeks ago, you retweeted something from Jagoff Brewery. He's going to be seeing the Pixies in a week.
Oh, right.
And I was like, okay, I mean, great, but you know, I said Meteor Shower is cooler. And I think you took it like, wow, Greg really doesn't want to hear what I have to say. But that was, it was just, I'm kind of beyond the point of caring about concerts is all. So I think I gave the wrong impression, so okay. I apologize for that.
Okay. I had forgotten about it, so it wasn't like it was eating away my soul.
Well, that's good. So we have a Lindemann's, we've learned to call it a framboise.
Frambozen beer. Whatever.
That's our...
This is an old one. This is from... Case Heather bought from before we had kids. So
and when that was the only beer that Heather would drink.
Yeah. And she doesn't drink it anymore.
Yeah.
She thinks these beers are past their prime, so she won't drink these ones in particular. She'll have Lindemann's on occasion when we go out and pay an arm and a leg for them.
Ooh, strong raspberry.
Doesn't fade with time, that's for sure. Look how rusty it is under the cap. I mean, this beer looks like an old beer, but that fruitiness does not go away.
So you have a new member of the family.
We do. We got a cat. A cat named Dusty. Dusty the cat. And Dusty the cat was from the Humane Society of Western Pennsylvania. He's a pretty cool cat, actually.
Yeah, a cute looking cat.
I think he likes me better than anyone else in the house. He must have known I was the final arbiter on his selection.
Mm. He gets it. He gets it. And it's good to bring a cat in now because you're not going to have any more kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the cat understands the status quo in the house. So
right.
It's not going to get jealous and start, you know, peeing all over the place because you're not devoting enough time to it.
Right. Yeah, he's a pretty cool cat so far. So I'm pretty happy with him. Couldn't expect a better cat to be found at the Humane Society. He was surrendered to the Humane Society because the previous owners, quote unquote, did not have enough time for a cat.
Wow.
That's what everyone said. Like, everyone at the Humane Society is like, what? Not enough time for a cat? I mean, I can imagine the lifestyle, right? You know, someone, you know, imagine like Damien, right? Like if he was single, right? Like always out of town for work type thing, right? Yeah, that's kind of hard for a cat, especially if you're gone almost all week, every week, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, not having enough time for a cat, so you give it up. The cat wasn't neutered, you know, he obviously didn't have his vet checkups or whatnot, so they kind of might have gotten the cat, you know, like, oh, free cat, yeah, whatever. And then two years later, oh, we don't really don't want a free cat.
I mean, right now I'm actually taking care another weekend at least of taking care of Damien's dog and cat at his house. So they're Mystic and Miss Kitty are back at home. And... yeah, it's fun to take care of them, even though I'm allergic, because I just stock up on my Allegra, and I'm okay for the time.
Plan is never to let Dusty in here, so hopefully this room doesn't get taken over. So hopefully this is your sanctuary. That's what I'm hoping.
I mean, I was, you know, I dropped one before I started petting him, and I'm fine. So.
Okay.
It's okay. You know, I'll deal. He had a cat before, and I survived.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, no, it's fun to take care of, you know, animals for a little bit. And then it's fun to not have to worry about them.
I hear you. Yeah, I'm not ready for a dog yet. But I like dogs, right? It's just...
yeah.
You can't leave them alone for as long, right? I'm just not ready for that commitment with a dog just yet.
Yeah, I mean, I have to be there. Right now, I'm basically sleeping there. Because, you know, I have to be there at least once every 10 hours to let Mystic out to go... pee-pee and poo-poo. But in general, it's, you know, I got her to go pee-pee right before I left. And, you know, as soon as this is done, you know, whenever we do get done, I'll drive right there and let her out.
Right. If you can make if he if he she lasts yeah. she lasts 10 hours, that's good for a dog.
Yeah, no, she does. She can hold it.
Cool.
Okay, so I have a lot of stuff to talk about. So
all right, let's talk about community.
All right, let's talk about community. Number one on my list too. So you finally got a chance to see the episodes.
Yep. Yeah, I watched a couple. Watched the first two or three. And then I took a little bit. Things came up, and then I watched the last two early in the week, and then the one that just aired, I watched like last night or the night before. So yeah, I'm all caught up on it. It's good. Did you, the one where they were looking for the Ass Crack Bandit?
Yeah.
The science teacher guy in the greenhouse.
Remember that grew up with Ben Folds. Ben Folds, yeah.
It's like, hey, it's Ben Folds, my guy.
And he also did the song at the end that was running.
Yeah.
Yeah. There are a lot of guest stars this season. The last episode had a whole bunch of guest stars doing just, you know, 1 minute cameos, which I thought is sort of a brilliant way to use them.
I saw like the guest starring so and so, but then like, you know, later on like Nathan Fillion says, I'm like, I didn't see his name. I was kind of surprised to see Fillion on there. The head custodian.
Yeah. He was having a meeting with a 4-star general and that show is it's Dan Harmon's brain. And when he was not there, it was not Dan Harmon's brain, and so you can't duplicate
it. It's so cool that they casted, I forget the actor's name, but Mike from Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
You know, in a comedic role, because in Breaking Bad, he was such a badass, bad guy, right? And it's just so cool that, you know, now he's like, you know, they cast him in a comedic role.
Well, he has a background in that, I think, so.
But most people, I didn't know him from anything else, right? And now you get to see him do something completely different. Even though he's still the criminal justice ex-cop guy, right?
Right. He's still got a gruff edge to him, but, you know, he's just doing it in a more comedic role. And you know, he fits in perfectly.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
Yeah. It's a really, really good show, again.
So, what else do you have to say about it? I mean, is there anything that stood out? Anything that I missed? Anything?
I really liked the fourth episode, the polygraphy episode, which was dealing with Pierce's death. I thought that was
pretty good.
That was an instant classic, really.
Team polygraph.
Yeah. And I love the episode after it, which some people were less, they didn't like as much because they thought that...
Is that the hot level?
Yeah, because some people were complaining that it was kind of like overdoing the concept episode thing. But I thought that was kind of the point, which was like they wanted to take stuff that the community had done in the past, a sort of paintballish type thing.
Right.
And they were trying to do the same sort of thing. The characters were trying to do the same sort of thing, and they were trying to get into it because they all really didn't want to face this thing they were having to face, which was the choice leading. So they were all sort of projecting this. And another side of it was that they were really getting into it. I mean, if you look at the first paintball, the only people who were really getting into it were Troy and Abed. They were the ones who were dressing up and stuff like that. Everyone else was just... They were going along with it, but they weren't really, you know, dressing up or really wanting to participate. And in the second one, they happened to be dressed up because they were at a whole dance thing. But even then, when it switched to sort of a Star Wars thing, everyone was like, oh, God, we have to go through this.
Right.
In this one, everyone, the entire school is sort of going along with it. They sort of embraced Abed's unique thing.
Yeah, yeah. There was really no one who was, like, outside of it.
Yeah. So I think that... You know, when you look at it from that perspective, it really is a very sort of sweet story. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a great exit for Donald Glover. And this last one was not the best episode of the season. This one was sort of a more, you know, run-of-the-mill, I guess you could say, episode. But, you know, you need some of those to space in between your big, huge conceptual beasts. And... if you're looking for the best Dan Harmon show of this week, it was Rick and Morty.
Rick and Morty.
Okay. Which was just brilliant. The episode, it's still on YouTube if you want to watch it. It's called Rick Potion Number 9. It starts out as a standard sort of love potion thing, and then it goes spiraling in a direction that you didn't expect it to go.
Okay. I'll have to check it out. Yeah, I've forgotten to follow you up on that one. The polygraph one, the after the credits thing where they're at the bar. I had never seen Walton Goggins. And I almost think that's like Walton Goggins' normal, like, personal accent and maybe a little bit of his personal demeanor. I don't know. He could have been just acting as a guy cutting loose, but like on The Shield, he never acts that way. You know, on Justified, he acts a very particular way, which is obviously not him, mm-hmm. right? It's very Appalachia, you know, and whatnot. And when I saw that, I was like, that's fascinating. I mean, I don't know. It just felt like, hey, that's kind of Walton Goggins right there. You know, I don't know though.
Well, I mean, if he's enough of a chameleon, then it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
You know, if he can do all those things. So yeah, I thought he was great in that role and as sort of a surrogate Pierce, he did a great job. Mm-hmm. I loved the end with the sperm. That was so funny. and the whole, my favorite part of that was the line going from Jeff to Abed when, you know, he says, Jeff, did you know that you're gay? No? Agree to disagree. Yeah. And then going to Abed and saying, Abed, did you know that you were insane and nothing you said made any sense to me? Yep. Here is your sperm.
Did you ever see the scenes? I don't think you watched Sons of Anarchy, but Walton Goggins had a cameo on there as a transvestite.
No.
Like a transvestite hooker. Like, so he has like these big fake tits and whatnot. It's a pretty funny, maybe just try to look up that scene, you know, on YouTube just to see it. Cause I mean, that's an interesting cameo. You see this guy, you know, Shane from The Shield and, Boyd Crowder from Justified. And, you know, now he's playing this, you know, homosexual transvestite hooker, you know, it's pretty funny.
So we are not. We are here after a 1 week delay because of snow.
Freaking snow!
It was ridiculous. That Saturday night, I was stuck at Damien's place, and it just the snow was piling up, and mm-hmm. I couldn't even get out because the driveway is on an incline, and it was not a good day to be driving. So unfortunately, this is going to come out a week after, probably.
Well, I was a week late on posting the show anyway, so. It's funny how you get a little busy and then it's like 7 days later, like, yeah. Shit.
So that's why we had a little bit of a delay in there, so we apologize for that. But, you know, mm-hmm. weather happens and sometimes our schedules don't sync up quite right.
I've been watching a couple documentaries on Amazon Prime. Have you seen Gasland or Gasland Part 2?
No.
So it's a documentary. So Gasland Part 2 is actually produced through HBO Documentaries. First one was an independent. This guy lives in eastern Pennsylvania.
It's about fracking?
He's really, really anti-fracking. So you kind of have to pass that through a filter, like, you know, is this the true story or is this propaganda from the other side type thing? But there's enough in it that you know that's not propaganda from the other side that kind of pisses you off, mm-hmm. you know? I mean, the gas companies are really corrupting the system. You know, this whole, it just seems like the, you know, the whole elected officials system, like, you know, it's exempt from the, you know, Clean Drinking Water Act. You know, frack chemicals don't have to be disclosed because they're exempt from the Clean Drinking Water Act. Oil, you're giving me this incredulous look.
That's surprising to me. Right off the bat, that's surprising to me.
I mean, but that's a fact, right? That's not spinning things. That's a fact.
Yeah, I know. That's like, wow, really?
Yeah. I mean, all these chemicals are exempt. In the show, they keep calling it the Dick Cheney loophole. I guess Dick Cheney helped muscle this through mm-hmm. Congress, right? The Clean Air Act, they're exempt from that. And the amount of... We talked a little bit about... I heard on NPR about methane, you know, waste, leakage into the atmosphere and how much that is. Gasoline goes into that a lot. The it's huge, the amount. There's in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, there's more methane leakage into the atmosphere than there is carbon dioxide from all the cars.
And I don't know how to quantify that.
You know, methane's like 10 times as potent a greenhouse gas as
CO2. Yes, but I don't know what... that number is in relation to the amount that's in the that's generated by the world and how much of an effect that will have. So sort of, well, this, you know, was, a statistic like that, it seems big on its own, but I don't know how to compare that to the whole. Right. So I can't make a decision.
It seems like the whole industry, this was a researcher in Dallas doing just his area. That's where the stat came from. It didn't seem like he was putting a focus on it to make it sound worse. It was just his area where he was researching. And, they went on. There was a bigger segment in the documentary about these condensation tanks leaking and stuff like that, inventing the atmosphere and burning and whatnot. And, they talk about a cleaner burning natural gas and whatnot. But if you take into account all the production loss from the wellhead, through production and whatnot, it's a much more powerful greenhouse gas emitter than just burning the gas at the furnace. And, it's part of the story. And then, there's things that are infuriating in there about our mayor, Tom Corbett, is deep in the pocket of oil and gas. Mm-hmm. It just pissed me off. Luke Ravenstahl just started a new a private consulting company. And there's and he's going to work with the oil and gas. Like every former official, Tom Ridge, right? He works for the oil and gas companies. Mm-hmm. Corbett is going to work for the oil and gas companies. Rendell, our former governor, Democrat, works for the oil and gas companies. Now it's like they just hire up all these former trusted legislators and governors and whatnot and get them to say, everything's okay.
Well, I mean,
20%.
What that is that sort of like you can think that they told them at some point, support our legislation, we'll give you cushy jobs afterwards. Yeah. So, that's bad.
20%. No, here's some of the stats that could be that aren't just facts that could be focused a little bit, especially since, this guy really hates fracking, right? 20% of wells have that leak into the water table. So, once they drill the well, they're supposed to put concrete casing or concrete down the outside of the metal casings. It's called cementing a well. And some information they found that was leaked out of the internal documents from oil and gas companies is that 1 in 5 wells leak. I mean, the cement job doesn't work. They're either cracked and gas exfiltrates up the outside of the pipe into the aquifer.
How much?
Well, I'm talking about one in a lot. How much per well? I think that varies. They didn't really say.
You can say 1 in 5 leak, but if they're leaking a tiny, 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 tiny amount, that doesn't matter. Right? You have to get the context behind some of these statistics. Not that I don't think it's bad. I just want, without having the context, I can't make a reasoned decision on it.
There's whole neighborhoods and whole parts of towns that can't use their water because of methane in the water, it's a great thing for a documentary, but, showing people light their kitchen faucet on fire.
Right.
It's scary shit when you see that, there's going to be 180,000 wells drilled in Pennsylvania, and if 20% of those leak,
It's worth noting that, two things are worth noting. Number one, is this better than
It's pretty good.
Than I remember it being.
It needs 7 years on it, I guess.
Yeah.
This is the lineaments from Bose, Frambozen beer, whatever.
It's not exactly funky, but it's not exactly overtly sweet. It's got a nice sour kick to it, and it feels pretty nice. Okay, anyway, back to the fracking. This sort of thing is going to be more and more common because as we start to run out of easily accessible energy resources, there's plenty more available. It's just we're going to have to use more and more technology to get to them. So, what we're running out of is the easily accessible stuff, the stuff that's right down on the surface. And so we're going to have to start doing more and more stuff like fracking to keep us growing at the pace that we are growing.
The thing you got to watch out for is, so oil is a resource, gas is a resource, clean drinking water is a resource. And, we're running without much abandon, into this, fracking, gas is the future, all this stuff. And it's kind of a Pandora's box, though. Once you fuck up the water, water's fucked up, right? And so it's you know, that's the cautionary tale of
well,
this
I
stuff.
Mean, if it becomes a major problem, then what you're going to see is you're going to see solutions to that being figured out. Once there's money behind a solution, then in this sort of environment, you'll see solutions.
Gasland, well, in Gasland Part 2, they posit that the oil industry has been looking for a solution to these leaky wells for 20 years, and there's just no way to stop it. It just, it's part of it, you know.
Well, there's no way to be 100% certain that a well is going to leak. That's just, that's the fact of the matter. There's nobody had to be 100% certain of any technique. That's the way the universe works. There's uncertainty in everything. Mm-hmm. So when you disregard perfection, now obviously they could do better than 1 in 5, but to expect that they could do it where absolutely none leak is sort of a pie in the sky kind of thing.
Right. But 1 in 5, you think maybe 1 in 30 should be your target, right?
Again, it depends on how much they're actually leaking out. If 1 in 5 are leaking, but there's only really 1 in 30 that's leaking a major amount that requires, mm-hmm. that really does. I mean, you know, they can say, oh, it's leaking one part per billion per month, mm-hmm. but that's not really going to be a problem. But if there's 1 in 30 where it is a problem, well, that doesn't sound as bad.
Another thing they mentioned in Gasland 2 is that the oil and gas industry uses PSYOPs, psychological operations.
Everybody does.
And counterinsurgency in these neighborhoods, you know, counterinsurgency techniques to combat, you know, the protesters.
Marketing is PSYOPs.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, that they use PSYOPs is...
Well, but it is illegal to use PSYOPs against American citizens.
Well, it depends on... I guess it depends on what you define as PSYOPs. Right. What are you defining as PSYOPs?
Whatever the government defines as PSYOPs as they use in war.
Okay. Are you sure about that with all this NSA stuff going on?
Yeah, I don't know. But they're talking about, like, they're using the Army's handbooks and taking military training classes. You know, now this is some of the lens stuff, right? This is I'm not. This doesn't piss me off
as
much.
This is starting to sound very Alex Jones type.
It doesn't
Agenda 21.
Doesn't piss me off as much as the legislators in their pockets.
The oil companies are going to take over the country type shit and going to put us in camps. I don't think so. They need us out there purchasing their oil, or else the whole point is.
Not that far, but
they're doing military training. That sounds a little ridiculous.
No, psychological operations, that part of it, right? And I don't have all the stats to argue with you, Greg. It's just the, you know, well, they're.
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just saying it strains credibility a bit. Strange credulity, let's say.
I think it's just a way of showing this is the way that they're taking on this, right? You're going to have pushback in the neighborhoods, and they're, you know, maybe, you know, if you, to a degree, everything is that, right? That's how you combat, you know, people that don't want to, you know, sign away, you know, the leasing. I don't know, but that doesn't piss, I didn't mean this to be a big part of the conversation. This doesn't piss me off as much as the other parts do, mm-hmm. you know, and, if you got some time, watch Gasland. It'll make you. Your gut feel will be angry, and then you're going to have to step back and say, "Okay, no, let me look at this through my own filter." And I, like I said, there's facts. There's things that are flat out facts that piss me off, and then there's things that like are definitely an agenda of an anti-fracking person, which, you know, it's like, if that's true, that really, really is sucks.
Well, yeah, it shouldn't be about just looking it through my own filter. It should be about finding all the information you can about a subject and really pouring it over and getting as best an interpretation of it as you can, and then making an informed decision.
I watched one more thing I'd like to do before we go into the show. I watched another documentary last night, Exit Through the Gift Shop. Have you seen this one?
That's a Banksy.
The Banksy one?
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
I haven't seen it, yeah.
It's interesting. Basic premise is that there's this, French guy living in LA, and he videotapes everything. You know, he's just kind of a hoarder, but video, right? He's a hoarder of video. Mm-hmm. And he went to Paris, and his cousin was Space Invader, some guy that made these little mosaic tiles of Space Invaders and put them up all over the place, street art. From there, he started filming street artists and whatnot, and he got to know Banksy, and he had a rapport with Banksy. And but he's recording and recording and recording, but he doesn't know how to make a movie. He records all these tapes, and he never watches them. He just has bins and bins and bins and bins of tapes that he never plans on watching. And at a certain point, Banksy challenges him, like, now's the time to put out your documentary. Dude goes back, and it's this piece of shit thing. It's like a crazy person just flipping the remote, click, 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 click. That's how it was edited. They showed a little bit of it in the movie. And so Banksy got the tapes and started putting together his own video of street art. And at the same time, he had challenged this guy to start making some of his own art or something like that. And this guy worshipped Banksy, so he did. He started doing some street art, and then he started trying to mimic a big exhibition that Banksy had done, right? And this guy doesn't know what he's doing. He's making hack, crappy art. He hires this studio full of graphics designers and all this stuff. He's spending all this money, and he has an exhibit, and it's wildly successful. He makes millions and millions of dollars, right? And, they show he's successful, and Banksy's all distraught. He's like, the whole time he's hood up and blurred out, voice faked out and stuff like that. And he's like, I don't know if the joke's on me or what. And so I was watching this, and, something I was like watching, I'm like, that's crazy. And this morning I was thinking, I wonder if this whole thing was a hoax or something like that. So I go online and start reading about it, and there's a bunch of hoax controversy, but some, like on Wikipedia, it pretty much leans towards saying it's not a hoax, and then I read some other articles that leans towards it's definitely a Banksy art piece, right? Mm-hmm. Not a hoax so much. This dude really existed. This dude was a video hoarder and all this stuff. This dude was videotaping street art and whatnot. And then I think where the art piece starts is where he challenges this dude to become an artist, right? And the art was probably all made by Banksy trying to look like a bad artist who is not Banksy, right? It's a bunch of crappy Andy Warhol. I mean, I'm not saying Andy Warhol shit's bad, but this is a bad versions of stuff that is very reminiscent of Andy Warhol and stuff like that. And that's where I'm coming down on it, is that from the point where this dude goes from videoing street art to becoming an artist, it's a Banksy project, I think. That's how I see it. And Banksy is the actual artist behind it. But it was a pretty fascinating... I'm sorry if you wanted to watch it. I probably just spoiled it to everyone out there. But it's a really good documentary. It was, critically acclaimed. And, and just the way it was put together, it's a fun watch. It's neat. And this French guy, Dr. Brainwash was his street, or Mr. Brainwash was his street name. It's funny because he just looks like a mumbling idiot trying to put this archer together, and he makes millions and millions of dollars.
I read an interesting theory. Do you know much about Doctor Who?
I have never seen one. I know some, I guess.
The theory is that Noah's Ark was a TARDIS.
Okay.
So a TARDIS is bigger on the inside than it is on the
right,
inside.
Right. I saw that on Twitter. Was that you?
That was
someone else.
That
okay.
Forget where I read that, but I was like, that's silly enough to make sense.
Was he the first Doctor?
Boy, there's a lot of science stuff that I wanted to get to, because there was some really interesting stuff that happened. But how much time do we have?
29:14.
I don't know whether I want to bring it up now or get into it in the post show. Let's bring up one.
Okay.
There's this really cool theory that I posted a link to in my Twitter feed about a week ago or so. It's a new way of looking at the universe, at dark energy, and this posits that dark energy doesn't exist and that the universe is not expanding.
Okay.
And the thing is, the thing about this theory is that it is actually fully compatible with the information that we have. So there's no way right now of testing this theory. So right now it's just a different model, but it makes essentially all the same predictions. And it's a really cool new way of looking at the problem. So to understand what this is, you have to understand why we think the universe is expanding. And the basics of it is redshift. We see galaxies all around us everywhere we look, and we can determine how far they are away from us. And the ones that are closer to us are slightly redshifted, and the ones that are further away from us are more redshifted, and the further out they get, the more redshifted they get. And the redshifting, we believe, is due to them moving away from us. So it's a relativistic Doppler effect that's going on. And so that's interpreted as everything is moving away from everything else. And by the equivalence principle, you could say if you were in one of these galaxies, you would see the same thing. Everything's moving away from everything else. That's the accepted idea, and it makes sense. This idea came out. It's a paper that I don't think has been peer-reviewed yet, but it has made the rounds, and no one has found any, as far as I know, problems with it. And the model is this. What if there is a scalar field that is increasing mass over the mass of things over time? So everything, mass is a dimensional thing, so it's only compared to something else. So you can never actually measure if mass itself was getting larger and larger and larger. Mm-hmm. You wouldn't really be able to measure that. But what you would see, what you would expect to see is, because of the way that light is emitted from atoms, that's how we tell things like, you know, hydrogen lines and whatever. So what we're looking for when we see these things are spectra, and we see spectra when they're redshifted, the hydrogen lines are a little bit over into red, and then when they're redshifted, they're more and more into the red. The idea is, if mass is getting larger and larger, in our reference frame, if we were to look at light from 2 billion years ago compared to it is now, in our own reference frame, it would be blue shifted because the mass is getting larger and everything should be moving up. That means that light distant from us would actually be redshifted, because that light is from a different time when mass was lighter, and so that is redshifted. And the further back we go, mass is even more lighter, and so, that's more redshifted.
But why does, when you say mass is heavier, more, aggressive, greater, you mean the mass of the emitting object or mass of everything?
Everything.
Or mass of everything. So you have this photon out there flying through space. It was emitted at a kindler, gentler time where mass was 1. And now mass is 2. How does that change the spectra?
So because the spectra is based on mass, it's based on how the mass interacts with the energies that cause it to emit light. So
you're saying, let me ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
The standard candle stars that we use emitted bluer light in the past? Or no. Redder light in the past than they do now? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
So that's why we see. So when the closer things to us are less red, and the things that are further away, they emitted it a lot longer ago, and so they're more and more red.
Okay.
And so essentially, so in this model, the universe is more or less static. But the things that are further away were less massive when they emitted the light, and so the light is redshifted compared to what we see today, which is if we see a localized hydrogen spectra from our sun, is blue shifted compared to what it would have been in the past.
Does that still mean our visual radius will shrink over time?
That would imply that it wouldn't, because it would. The implication is that there is there are two really startling implications from this. First of all,
because it would just get lower in energy.
Yeah. So the universe.
Well, it would. It would. Things would still fade out of view, right? Given enough time, right?
Because given enough time,
it's going to go from red to infrared.
Yes.
To.
Yeah, but it wouldn't be on the same time scale. I don't believe it wouldn't be on the same time scale as what we predict with current models of dark energy. But the other thing about it is that I'm not quite sure how. I've read the paper, but I don't quite understand exactly how this works. But according to this model, there actually isn't a singularity. Or at least there isn't a singularity at the beginning of the universe. There's something that goes back into what's called an infinite null time, which is complicated. But there's...
No, I'd say it isn't so.
But there is a period of inflation, but there isn't what you would consider the singularity. And I'm not sure exactly why. I can't explain exactly why. But I find the perspective interesting. It shows that you can take your observations, flip it on its head, and get a whole new way of looking at things. Now, we don't have any idea whether this is true or not.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, we have evidence that stuff can be redshifted by moving away from you.
Yes.
Right? You can test that. There's no test for...
No. There's no test for... We wouldn't be able to know.
Right.
If everything massive was getting larger, then...
This was thought up by a string theorist, wasn't it?
I don't know. I actually don't know.
If it's something that can't be tested, it must have been thought up by a string theorist.
The point is that the model fits, right? And it's a different way of looking at the same thing.
I'm so surprised you have this point of view, because the string theory math works, and you're so incredulous against string theory.
I'm not saying that it's the correct view. I'm simply saying this is a very intriguing concept, and it deserves to be looked into. Now, string theory was a very intriguing concept, but it's been looked into for 40 years, and bupkis. This thing is new. It deserves some looking into. If we don't turn up anything for, you know, I would say 5 or 6 years, then we can be pretty sure it's probably not true, or at least that there's, you know, no reason to continue along this path until we have a better idea of how we can get predictions out of this. The reason I am against string theory is not because it's necessarily a different paradigm, a different way of looking at things, but because it's been around for so long and has not only yet to make reasonable, accurate predictions that can be tested, but it also continues to get more and more philosophical as opposed to scientific with every passing day. So it becomes even less testable as things go on, because it starts to do things like these brains that are outside of our universe that are collapsing together that we would never be able to tell, and all these weird structures that come from the math, and the math is very pretty and very elegant, but that doesn't mean anything if it's not real. If it's not reality.
I want to go back to how objects with lower mass multipliers, right?
This theory predicts a scalar field.
Right. But what's the mechanic that has them emit redder light?
Well, you have to understand...
They're less massive, so the light has less energy. But I'm trying to figure out the mechanic there.
So it has to do with the way in which spectra are emitted. Right? So when you see spectra, it's because certain things are absorbed at certain energies. And as things are less massive, they absorb at different energies than they would if they were more massive. So that's why, you know, when we, if you take spectra of the sun, you can see, you know, if you do a fine enough spectra, you see all these little lines mm-hmm. where stuff is being absorbed, all these black lines. So it's not a, it's not just a one big rainbow. There are these black lines in there where stuff is being absorbed by stuff in there. So the idea is that if things were to grow, if everything was to grow more massive, then these lines would shift in, you know, on the rainbow, because what happens is the mass is causing the light to be absorbed at a specific frequency, and as that mass grows, the light is absorbed at a different frequency.
Okay, I can kind of see it. So now, how do we test it?
I don't know. Got no it. One knows right now. But it seems
testable. It seems. Well, except for we can't get there, right? You can't have two sensors far enough apart to make a difference. But if we could get anywhere we wanted to go, it should definitely be testable.
If smart people start thinking along these lines and start thinking outside the box in these ways, then that's how we come up with new theories. Mm-hmm. I mean, you take an idea and you flip it around and you change some things and it still fits observations, but there's a new wrinkle or there's something different about it. I like this sort of outside the box thinking. It doesn't mean it's true. It doesn't mean it's right in any way, but it does mean there's a new way of looking at things that doesn't fly in the face of all the data that we currently have. Check my Twitter feed. There's a link to it. It's a Nature article. It's really cool.
It's interesting. I'm wondering, like, what's the... How close is can a body be for us to detect the redshift of it, right? You know, is it a couple light years or is it hundreds of light years?
Well, I mean, we're detecting galactic things. Those are hundreds of thousands of light years.
Oh, right. But how close? I mean, do any of the planet finders, do they do Doppler, right? They do shifting of light, don't they?
Well, you're not going to detect... All the planet finders are just looking at stars, and the only stars that we can really make out are the stars in our galaxy.
Right.
You're not going to find any redshift.
But some of those, I think,
due to expansion in our galaxy. Our galaxy is too bound by gravity. It's
right.
not...
No, but what I'm talking about is at that distance, at dozens of light years...
I don't think there's... No. That's in our general frame of reference, and so we wouldn't see a significant difference there. This is something that takes billions of years for us to see a difference, according to the theory.
Well, there's two things I'm asking. First thing I'm asking is, they do use Doppler to detect wobbles in planets, right? So it's a pretty small thing that, you know, we have a pretty fine grain detection of shifting of light.
Yes.
Right? And that's definitely from a planet moving back and forth, you know, but it's not a lot of shift and we can detect that. So, you know, we have a pretty sensitive instrument already, which is great. And then the next question is...
We're also getting a lot more light from those stars because they're close to us as opposed to, I mean, they're within our galaxy. They're within 100,000 light years of us as opposed to these other galaxies that we're measuring, which are 2, 3, 4 billion light years away, up to 10 billion light years away, more. So that's a lot less light to measure. So it takes more observation and more and more photons to get your detection.
I'm just curious, you know, what's the redshift of Andromeda, right, compared to...
Andromeda, I don't think the redshift is anything because it's blue shift. It's coming close to us.
Okay. Well, closest galaxy it's redshifted. I wonder how far that is out.
I think it's got to be at least in the 100 million light years range, at least, if not further away, before we really get to the... Because you have to get out of really the Virgo cluster before you really start to see.
Right.
Because inside the Virgo cluster, the gravitational effects are larger than the effects of dark energy, but once you get outside of that, then you start to see these things.
It's an interesting theory.
Yeah, it's cool. It really is a cool thing because it
Does it solve any... What problems does it solve that we have? Dark energy, you said.
Yeah.
Not necessary.
Not necessary. Solves the problem of a Big Bang singularity.
Does it mean... How does it play with dark matter or anything? Or is it still... Is it dark matter?
I think dark matter still plays a role.
But you don't have this expansion that you're worried about. This acceleration of expansion.
It's a cool new way of looking at things. It may be totally wrong.
Yeah.
But
you're just trading one mystery force for another, right?
Well, yeah, but the idea is, hey, maybe people can look at this and find a way to test it. Because right now, it's good to have alternate stuff going around as long as it's reasonable alternate stuff. There's nothing terrifically unreasonable about this. This is an entirely reasonable way of modeling the universe. It's just, it's not the orthodox way of looking at things.
So you said there wasn't a Big Bang. Or at least not the singularity.
There was not a singularity. There was an inflationary period, according to this. But I don't know the full details in that. That's in the article and in the paper.
Okay. So it's not the infinite universe that we used to... It's like not, it came back to
no,
that.
It's not. It's not necessarily a steady-state universe. In fact, it could be collapsing.
Okay. Well, I got nothing else to say about that. It's hurting my head enough.
Where do we get into the post show? I got lots more to talk about.
All right. I think it's time to drink some Imperial Stout.
All right.